of a Gang podcast for Saturday, February 6th, 2010. I'm Steve Borsch, and on with me is Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Phil Wilson.
Morning, all.
Graham Thickens.
And a happy post-mini-demo morning to you all.
And last but not least, and of course important, is our guest, Rob Weber of W3I. How you doing, Rob?
Great. Thanks for having me, guys. It's I'm a huge fan. I listen to every one of your episodes.
So oh, excellent.
Pleasure to be joining today.
Excellent. Well, glad to have you
come
on.
Come on. Rob, you're already on. You don't need to suck up.
I got a long drive. I live in Maple Grove and drive up to St. Cloud. So I have a lot of time to listen to podcasts. I wish you guys could produce more. That's the only thing that it's
well,
great.
There you go. See, Phil, we should do more shows.
Yeah, see, well, you know, I'd be worried, you know, the quality could, you know, really bottom out. We're close to the bottom now, so.
Right. That's right. Well,
we are talking about doing some more sort of in-person ones, you know, on location kind of stuff. So that's always fun.
Yeah, it is.
More to come on that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Rob, I'll just give you for those of people who are listening who don't know who you are, you're the VP of Business Development and a co-founder with your twin brother and also Aaron of W3I. And you guys, why don't you just tell us the backstory about how you guys started this and how you got off on this adventure?
Sure. Thanks. I think, you have to sort of get to know where we founded the company back in 2000. You have to actually go back maybe a few years before that. We were all three going to a community college called North Hennepin in Brooklyn Park. And we would spend a lot of time in the computer lab, just pretty, you know, it's around like 95, 96. And everything is sort of, you know, the internet's just starting to take off.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided, you know, we were working the kind of, you know, normal 16-year-old, 17-year-old kind of, you know, retail jobs or whatever. And we said, you know what, why don't we try to do something a little bit more interesting? So we actually launched our first website in, it was about 1997. It was a baseball card website that actually we ran for about a year. It was actually sort of, we couldn't figure out what we wanted to do. So what the hell, let's create a baseball card website. And we were trying to sell all of our old baseball cards. And even back then, being a kind of a hobby industry, it was quite competitive.
Yep.
Partner in that business, that actually was Ryan and I, my twin brother, Ryan. And our third partner happened to be Adam Ostro, who, I just actually had lunch with him after, about 15 years since we sort of dissolved our baseball card website. But now he's sort of gone on to become the chief editor over at Mashable. So I had the pleasure of having lunch with him at CES a few weeks ago. But it was pretty cool to catch up with him and all that. But so we had a couple of different businesses. Nothing really was too successful, you know, between the sort of mid-90s to the late-90s, but we were starting to develop some skills in particularly in the area of kind of recognizing content consumption patterns on the internet through, you know, search analytics and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And starting to sort of recognize where there was sort of a lot of pent-up demand and where some of the bigger internet media companies were sort of not servicing that demand. We set out to, we created a free application directory and started covering almost like a blog. I mean, nobody called it a blog back then, but then made a little bit of money on that. I think my brother Ryan and I we probably made about 500 grand in our last year in the dorm rooms, kind of in 99. And we said, you know what?
Wow.
We should try to do something. And of course, timing was great. You know, we start the business in 2000, right when the bubble was bursting, hire our first 12 employees. And that was a great time. But we were fortunate to have a good advisor. We sold 5% of our company to a group of angel investors right out of the get-go, led by our current chairman, Young Son, who's been with us since the beginning. He's actually from Palo Alto, but his wife is from Minnesota. So we have this sort of Silicon Valley kind of CEO, you know, involved with us. And he sort of let us know, you know, a little bit prior to the bubble burst, you know, watch out for your cash, guys. You know, this thing's going to sort of pop here. So then we kind of, you know, we had a really challenging first couple of years. You know, we were probably at about break even. We only had maybe less than 500 grand to start out with. But we sort of turned the corner when we launched our first consumer property, freeze.com. And really, you know, we've had the pleasure of having a really great team after we got that launched in about 2001. We grew the next 5 years, we grew by 50.5% a year. And we're able to sort of go from about, you know, those original kind of 12 employees up to about, you know, 50 to 60. And we're a little bit more than that today. But It was, you know, so the business has sort of grown. Our core business is around distributing consumer applications. And we're now starting to offer our services up to other consumer application publishers and marketers out there. And so that's sort of in a nutshell kind of the story.
Well, you know, first off, were you guys disappointed that you didn't hit 51%?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, right. You know, it was funny. There's a little, we definitely would love to hit 51%. Actually, going back, I can't remember what year it was. I think it was 2004, 2005. We had just launched a kind of a major platform overhaul, and we set this stretch goal for all the employees. And we said, if we can hit 200% growth from like 2004 to 2005, we'll fly the whole company to the Florida Keys. So sort of lo and behold, we grew by over 300% that year, and everybody ends up in the Keys just having a good time. But kind of backfired. You know, if you've ever been in a company where they throw out like a stretch goal, you never really think you're going to hit it, right?
But yeah. Oh, man. And so there's right now you guys are focusing on an installation manager called Install IQ. And could you talk about that and say tell us what that is?
Yeah, sure. So what Install IQ is, we launched this particular product that's our bread and butter today back in 2006. And it was along the same time when we changed our name to W3i. And really the premise of it was, you know, our vision is to connect people to applications. And what Install IQ allows us to do is essentially it's a white labeled technology for application publishers, particularly those with Windows applications today, although we're thinking about other platforms down the road. But what Install IQ allows us to do for these publishers is essentially answer the call of the user. The user's demanding that applications be free today. Even on, you know, if you think about the iPhone, and sort of, I've been looking a lot of the data on that, over 70 to 80% of the apps downloaded on the iPhone are free, and it's actually increasing. And I haven't seen Windows figures, but I think it's pretty similar to that. You know, freeware is sort of what consumers want. Mm-hmm. So these publishers that sort of look to us, and by the way, we have over 500 publishers that use Install IQ for their applications. They basically, they're left with sort of thinking about what other revenue model could I create? You know, and some have come up with maybe some kind of freemium kind of upsell. Others have sort of tried some different things. But essentially, what our product allows them to do is essentially recommend relevant other applications from other larger sort of consumer application companies, and recommend that while a user is installing their freeware application. And with that, we're able to share with them anywhere from about 50 cents to a dollar per install of their application. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're talking to, you know, freeware applications that are sort of getting millions of downloads, it starts to add up to some real money.
Well, so and then there's, some revenue there at least.
Yeah, definitely. It's a great business. I think we're starting to build a lot of awareness. I think it's kind of unconventional to market consumers through this type of a product. So it's still, even though we've been around for a while, we're still having to teach different, folks out there what we do. I think it's been a pretty successful product. So.
Well, and I was just going to say, you've had some pretty good coverage in the media as far as reaching the people. Have you not, Rob, recently? Are there any that you want to call out?
Yeah, I think, that's part of kind of the last couple of years. You know, since we changed our name, we're trying to figure out, we went from this direct-to-consumer company that never really tried to market to businesses in the industry to, you know, trying to build this name for ourselves as sort of, for our product and for what our vision is. So, you know, some of the things, we've been starting to do a little bit of outreach. I was asked to write a column for Clixi, which is one of the top digital media blogs out there.
Have you guys heard of Clixi? Yeah.
So I started, my first column was actually last month. It's on the topic of application marketing. It's sort of broader than Windows applications. I have a great interest in sort of iPhone and mobile apps, smartphone apps. You know, whether we'll be talking a little bit about, my next column is going to be on social app marketing. And of course, we'll talk a little bit about what you can do with desktop and, you know, desktop apps and then browser add-ons, which is actually within, when you think about kind of the desktop Windows operating system, there seems to be more growth in the browser add-on, these kind of hybrid applications, than I would say in the kind of the older, the more mature kind of Windows desktop application market.
Are you thinking Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to ask you, you think like Adobe Air, those and Silverlight type applications, or just in actual in browser?
Both. Yeah, I think of Adobe Air, Mozilla's, you know, Firefox extensions or add-ons.
Got it.
I think I group those all together in kind of a new category, which I kind of refer to sometimes as like hybrid apps. But yeah, we're getting a lot of a lot of marketers are starting to look at Air on creating applications. And, you know, I think there's some real interesting potential there. It's interesting. People think of desktop software as being totally stagnant. But if you're sort of a disruptive kind of up and coming company, there are actually a lot of models, whether you're using Air and the browser add-ons. You know, the benefit of those hybrid apps is you have access, you know, particularly the browser extensions, you have access to a variety of basically code base that's only accessible via the browser that you, in addition to that, you have access to the desktop operating system, which gives you a significant amount of opportunity that you otherwise wouldn't have in the form of a web page. So I think there's some real advantages, particularly around timing. You know, when you have applications that are integrated with the browser and with the desktop, you can make sure that you can add value, you know, sort of thinking about souping up your browser. You know, you can do some pretty interesting things with that.
Well, tell me a little bit about where you see that growth. You've talked about a lot of browser and desktop apps. Do you see that segment growing faster than mobile, or do you see a real opportunity in mobile and taking that further just from mobile apps to, you know, add-ons to mobile browsers as they kind of come of age?
Well, I think that's a great question. Definitely the desktop, there are some up-and-comers in the desktop application and kind of these browser application, you know, that world, although there are a lot of kind of, there are sort of legacy applications that are sort of almost abandoned by their original developers. So that market is definitely not growing as fast as the mobile content market or mobile application market. You know, I'll give you a little background. Our company grew by 27% in 2009 over 2008.
So now you're just bragging.
Well, it's not the 51% that we should be shooting for.
In a world where flat is the new up, I think that's pretty good.
No, we were pretty proud of the whole team. I think we did a good job. You know, it was obviously a very difficult and challenging year, but you know, we do think these other operating systems like mobile, I mean, our vision is not to connect the world to Windows applications, it's to connect the world to applications. And that means we're going to have to figure out these other platforms. And we've set aside an R&D, we've created an R&D program to essentially start looking at building out new products that will sort of attack some of these faster growing platforms. So we'll talk maybe later in the year, we can give you an update on our progress there.
We can assume that Mac would be one of those. I expect.
Yeah, maybe.
So, is the application market on the desktop and in other devices that you write about, like set-top boxes and in the car and so forth, are those going to go the same way that the iPhone has spawned all these app stores for mobile? Do you think?
Yeah, definitely. There's on the coattails of Apple right now, I think everybody is really sort of figured out that this app store model can work very well. Although I'd see there's a varying degree of strategies on what a good app store might look like. For instance, you know, just sticking on mobile, I've talked to some of the people over at Rim who are involved with kind of trying to make a little bit of a competitive response for their, you know, for the BlackBerry apps. And they're really focused more on quality than quantity. So they're talking about, you know, trying to keep it down to maybe a couple thousand apps, but really kind of inviting in developers that can create sort of the real hits on their platform. Now, I don't really know. I mean, they got a long way to go to try to keep up with Apple, obviously. But I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, whether it's sort of digital TV. I know Intel or netbooks. If you look at Samsung at CES announced that they're going to be launching an app store which will work with their I think it was their DVD players or their high def TVs along with their phones. So it's sort of interesting. You sort of think about why would you want your phones to integrate with your digital TV? But I think that'll be interesting to see how that plays out this year. Is that if that gets any traction? You know, also in netbooks, you have Intel announced very recently that they're going to be building an app store for netbooks. So it'll be, I think you're going to continue to see that anywhere there's sort of a connected user, that people are going to think about, you know, applications as a way to gain interest in their product or their platform.
Well, and we also saw this last week that Google is building an app store for business apps. That's a link that maybe we can post.
Yeah, so I saw that. That looks pretty interesting. I'll have to spend a little more time looking at that.
So as I'm listening to you, Rob, one of the things that strikes me in this whole app store adventure is sort of the disintermediation that isn't occurring with that, because it's sort of direct from the vendor to the consumer, and wondering how you might be able to play in there. But more importantly, I guess the question is there a platform that's emerging, or are there any standards that are emerging with application installs on all kinds of different mobile devices? And I know Apple's got one, and just like you guys were talking about, there's a lot of different methods. And then even the Samsung thing, which kind of doesn't make sense to me, to tie their phones to their TVs. But are there any standards emerging that you guys might be able to look at and say we could insert ourselves in this part of the process?
It's interesting. I haven't seen anyone talk about standards, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. If you have everybody's sort of trying to woo the developer, and it's, I guess, typical, you know, consumer electronic industry behavior. You know, nobody wants to sort of work with each other and be nice. So I think, it's interesting though. Some of our clients that are, like, for example, one of our customers is the Weather Channel. I think they're, in terms of application marketing, I think they're one of the best companies out there. They take a pretty early adopter approach in most of these application platforms or different operating systems. You know, for instance, the Weather Channel, you know, just I'll give you a couple examples. Like on the desktop, they have a browser add-on in the form of a toolbar, which is quite popular, as well as a standard Windows desktop application that you can use to sort of check your weather while you're on your computer. In addition to that, they've sort of gone into on the iPhone and on BlackBerry, created an application, and they rank among the, you know, the top apps on really every one of these platforms. So I think they're it's interesting. I hear a lot of talk from our clientele that have applications in these multiple platforms, that they're spending the most amount of their energy from a development standpoint, kind of making they usually create something core on like one platform, and they try to sort of back into the other platforms,
right?
So that there's sort of that there's no real reverse kind of compatibility. So I think that would be a great business opportunity. Maybe there's one of your listeners that has is maybe looking to develop some new cutting edge technology platform, could come up with something like that.
Well, in terms of, I don't know what events you go to, you and other folks at W3I, but you just mentioned you live in Maple Grove, and I know that I've seen you at a lot of different events, and so you're and also Andy Johnson, your CEO, really immersing yourselves in the Twin Cities tech scene and all the different things that are going on here. But what do you do specifically as the head of business development, looking at different technologies and trying to stay on top of all this? What sort of shows do you go to? Where do you go? How would you compare what you're experiencing elsewhere with here, and specifically being based in St. Cloud?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I think, from a business development standpoint, my role is to basically, I oversee our external kind of corporate communication, which means making sure we're building awareness for our company and our products. In addition to that, my team, there's about 10 people in my team. The business development function, it's really sort of the difference between sort of sales and business development. Sales, you kind of have a product that's sort of ready to go direct to every sort of customer. In business development, oftentimes you're having to it's a little bit more strategic where oftentimes you need, you may, maybe sometimes you have customers where you're just selling your core product right into it, but oftentimes you're having to put together sort of two players to sort of figure out how to get them to work together so that they could be a good customer for you. I think that's a sort of a notion that was spawned out of Silicon Valley, you know, a number of years ago. I think that, I think the whole business development sort of phraseology kind of came from there. But when I look at, so kind of where do I, what shows do we go to? Where do we travel? Or where do I travel? I tend to go to, there's sort of a mixture of between digital media and consumer technology. And it ranges from the very large shows. Like I mentioned, a group of, actually took three other fellow Minnesota tech entrepreneurs and I went out to the Consumer Electronics Show.
Yep.
So we did that. I find that to be one of my, I do that for fun. I've been going for every year for about 6 years. I think I missed 1 year. But I just, I don't write it off, but I end up working the whole time. So I don't know. I probably should just write it off. But I just love going out there. And we are able to meet with a lot of different clients at that show. I think there was about 120,000 attendees. That's about as big of an event that we would go to. I find that to be really good to get a sense for sort of the, you know, strategically where the whole market's headed. But if you really want to get down onto these individual platforms, you got to go to smaller, kind of more almost like meetups or, you know, smaller conferences. Like an example of that, one of the other co-founders, Ryan Weber, led a group of three or four from W3I out to a conference that was in December. Actually, Ryan spoke at it at the computer, I think it's the Computer History Museum out in Mountain View.
Oh, yeah.
And the topic was browser add-ons. It was called Add-on Con. And Ryan, we sponsored the event. The other two of the sponsors were Google and Firefox Mozilla. And basically that sort of topic was, you know, how do you both, you know, develop sort of cool extensions for your browser and then sort of how do you market and distribute them? So Ryan was on a panel, maybe we can put that in the show notes, there's a video that he had recorded. So that was probably about 200 people. So we imagine that across a whole bunch of little meetup kind of verticals where there you can get a much deeper into a platform or a application type if you're at something like that. Because you're never going to have enough density of browser add-on, you know, sort of developers or marketers if you're at CES. So we sort of do that across probably 10 or 12 different verticals. Like we'll go to a casual game conference in Seattle. That's usually in the summer. And any number of, we tend to do pretty well. We also go to some more of the larger digital media shows like ad tech, things like that. But how does that compare to local shows? I think, you know, what's interesting is I was so impressed when I went to the first mini demo about 2 years ago. When I finally showed up sort of one time and I just my brother Aaron, who's now, you know, has his own startup Open Preferences, told me to come down and there was so much energy. I was just fascinated. I've been to other things locally and I never saw that kind of energy and just sort of fire, you know, with sort of everybody. And yeah. I was, it reminded me a lot of the events that I've had the privilege to go to out on the West Coast. And I just felt like, wow, there's some really good energy here. And I think if we can kind of keep it centered, I think there'll be some good things that come out of it.
Yeah, I remember that event. And I had met your brother, Aaron, just a few weeks prior to that. And I think I met Andy just prior to that, too. And I was struck by how you guys, even though you are in St. Cloud, you know, it's really one big community. It's not that far away. And I think it's great that you're getting plugged in more and more and now even sponsoring Mini Demo last night.
Yeah, we love to support, you know, the community as much as we can. I sometimes joke with some of our employees that I consider that I've never had a real job in 15 years. This is kind of a hobby for me. So, you know, I sometimes wonder, would I have founded a company if there were sort of cool high tech opportunities for, you know, sort of people like myself and, you know, for us to be able to either contribute, you know, we don't really have clients locally, but I think it's really important to us to foster a strong tech community. You know, whether you're the tech startup or the growth company, we sort of all kind of can benefit from seeing this community prosper. So we love to do anything we can to help out. You know, I wanted to ask you guys a question. When you think about, you sort of talk about this local, you know, sort of buzz that's going on, how do you think, you know, I think I overheard on one of your past podcasts, kind of, how can we build more exposure on the national scene? Do you guys have any thoughts on that? Or
I sure do.
Human sacrifice.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's my favorite topic, Rob, as you know, and we chatted a bit about it last night at Mini Demo. But I think companies like yours, which are undoubtedly one of the most, if not the most successful startup to come out of the late 90s here in the internet space, you know a lot about what's going on in these other centers. You know, you partner with many firms in the Valley and elsewhere. You have customers all over the country, and you spend a lot of your time outside Minnesota. And I think the way you can help our community is, guys like you, and there are others that can just help the local startups understand how you do connect with the influentials and the players in these other tech centers, building bridges, as I say, with the Valley and with, other major technology centers like Austin and Boston and Boulder, Denver. Is that something that you see, Rob, that there's a need for in the local startup community, as I see?
I think so. I think that's one of the, I overheard, I think it was one of your previous podcasts that you had with Paul, and you're on the topic of sort of kind of headhunting and what we can do. And, sort of this notion of trying to get back to people to move back to Minnesota versus, other maybe opportunities to get people involved. I've tried to recruit people from the Bay Area multiple times for positions that we have. Even though I think we have some pretty strong links in the industry, we're always trying to build on that. And I found that often what I found is, allowing people to sort of work virtually is actually could be a really good strategy versus relocation. We've actually got people working virtually for us now out of their homes in a couple of people on the West Coast. We've also got a head developer that works for us right outside of Boston. So I find that, being a little bit more flexible in sort of your employment options is one good way. I think in also establishing that link into these other tech, sort of hubs, I definitely think, it's funny is I feel like alienated from some of the startups. I feel like if I knew a little bit more about their business and who they were trying to connect with in the industry, because of the different interactions we've had, I feel like I could be helpful in sort of advocating, on their behalf and, making introductions on their behalf to sort of people in the kind of broader tech industry. And I think that could be really helpful in a few strategic areas. But I feel like sometimes I don't know if that's what's most needed. But I think I think you can also get that from, advisors and investors. I mentioned our chairman earlier, Young Sohn, who's been with us since the beginning. He's taken a real interest, in Minnesota, even though he lives, right by Stanford. He actually, I know you guys had John Roberts on from New Council a little while ago. Mm-hmm. I think John has been working with a startup company called Field Nation.
Yes.
That was one that Ryan and my brother Ryan and I did an angel investment along with Young in this company. But Field Nation's kind of like a geek squad killer. It's all about essentially kind of creating like a cloud of technicians. They have over 10,000 IT professionals on there. Why is it important for someone like Manuel, the founder of Field Nation, to have someone like Young involved? Well, Young's been in the CE industry for 25 years, going back to Intel. You need to have a little bit of trust. Manuel's got the platform built out, but and he can call on these companies. But if you sort of have a guy like Young who is for example, if Manuel wants to sell into, let's say, TiVo, Young was a board observer for TiVo. I mean, he's sort of, those guys will, they'll pay more attention when he makes an introduction. It's not always what you say, it's who says it, So I think that, those are the kinds of opportunities that I think that can really accelerate a startup, particularly once you already have a product launched.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's the one thing that has troubled me for a long time is I was with Vignette during the .com heyday and based in Austin, Texas. And Austin at that time was Silicon Valley Junior, and everybody talked about how that was the next up and coming spot and so on and so forth. And other than South by Southwest, you pretty much don't hear anything about Austin, Texas anymore. And I've often wondered why there isn't a leadership taken by a Mike Arrington, for example, to create TechCrunch Junior sites in all these different markets, or why doesn't why isn't there a network of, like there is with the social media breakfast, where there are the social media club, right, where there's meetups that happen and there's this grassroots connection, rather than have every single market sort of do their own thing and then try to figure out how to connect to one another, which again, it has its own set of challenges because everybody kind of wants to do their own thing. But
well, there are some things that are happening like that, Steve. I'll just jump in and call out Innovate 100, which is the Innovate events being run by Chris Shipley, the former executive Demo. Producer of Demo.
Yeah.
And they are definitely starting to build around the country. They did their events in Europe in several countries. And, I think they're heading towards something like that. And I've been working like mad to get them to come to Minneapolis one of these times. So these are the kinds of things that I think Rob and I talk about when we talk about trying to, you know, spread the word and make the connections to what's going on here in Minnesota with all our great new startups.
Yeah. Well, let me just take this in a direction that maybe nobody expects, but it's because of opportunities that I see. Because with Install IQ, for example, the whole thing is if I'm installing something, I'm sitting here in front of my screen watching this stuff go on and paying some level of attention. And so there's a great opportunity and time lag there for lots of ads to show up or recommendations and so forth. I think about the same thing whenever I'm using Boxy or XBMC or any of these media centers. I've got a Mac Mini hooked to my high def TV, and then there's a Roku box I've got hooked up downstairs. And I think about the whole IPTV, Internet Protocol TV marketplace that is still in this huge state of flux right now. But companies are trying to figure out how to build little apps that'll plug into Boxy. And then when you pull up that app, they don't advertise. It's all about their shows. The advertising is embedded in their shows. But I see lots of screen real estate that's sort of gone to waste. And are you guys looking at that as a space?
We're definitely looking at that. I think we would probably more look at that in the maybe 2011, 2012. Although we have, just because I think, you know, I think more, we need to look at a little bit more saturation before it will probably be, you know, enough volume to sort of make a business out of for us. I will say, have you ever heard of a company called Cool Iris, Steve?
Yeah.
Cool Iris, absolutely. They happen to be a client of ours, so I think has figured out a very good model. It was started about, I think it was about 3 years ago. They're funded by Kleiner Perkins. It's a bunch of sort of Stanford, sort of recent Stanford grads that are sort of banded together. But if you look at their application, what it does is, you know, the typical kind of photo or video browsing experience on the web, you sort of have the click, you know, look at videos, then you know, as you're browsing through a web page, you click on one that you like, which spawns another page, and then you click to sort of play the video, and you end up having sort of four or five clicks in there. Right. And then if you want to sort of go back and look at another video, you got to sort of hit back three or four times and start navigating. Well, what Cool Iris has done, and by the way, I mentioned this because they've done it, they've done it on other devices outside of, you know, they started as a browser add-on. But now they're actually, it was announced at CES, they're actually powering the photo and video gallery exclusively for the Nexus One, the new Google device.
Oh.
And they're actually, I would expect that they will be coming out with something to sort of, you know, right on the set-top boxes and for TV. So I think it's pretty interesting. The way they are selling ads, they're not embedding ads in the content, and they've sort of picked up on your idea, Steve. They're showing ads as a part of this contextual sort of content discovery, this 3D wall that they built.
Mm-hmm.
So as you're sliding back and forth, looking at all these videos without having to have a lot of button clicks back and forth, they drop in sort of whether it's a video or a photo on behalf of one of their advertisers. So the ads sort of live with you during the navigation instead of during the content consumption. And they're having just phenomenal success. I actually think this is going to be one of the companies that you're going to hear a lot about over the next couple of years. They're a pretty exciting partner to have.
So are people going to pay for apps anymore, or is everything going to be free and ad supported?
I'm kind of biased towards that, right? Yeah. I think most everything's going to be free. I think there'll be, I think if you can build enough of a fan base and you can sort of prove the value of your application, I think there'll be opportunities to sell premium services. But I'm a huge believer in kind of the whole freemium model. If anyone's interested in this whole subject, I'd highly recommend, there's a book out it's about a year old now by Chris Anderson called Free, but it kind of gets into some of the history and the market dynamics of what that looks like. It's kind of a controversial book.
And it's free, by the way.
Yeah, you can get it digitally for free. There you go.
Yeah. I got the audiobook off of Audible, which is funny because the long version, which I think is over 8 hours, which he reads, is free. And the short three and a half, 4 hour version is you actually pay $20 for. So it's weird. An interesting model where he's taking the best bits and sort of your time is worth money kind of idea.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Well, you know, it's speaking of startups and collaboration and those sorts of things, you two were at Mini Demo, Graham and Rob, and what were your takeaways from there and the people that you talked to and so forth?
Oh, big time schmooze fest. Rob, I don't know if you ever got into the demos. I didn't. There was way too much discussing and schmoozing going on out in front. But I thought it was the best ever in that respect. How about you, Rob?
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's now that I think there's people are starting to make some connections and enough time passes. I think I started to sense that there's more business opportunities that are starting to spawn on it a little bit more. Whereas before, everybody, it seemed like it was new enough where people are kind of meet and greet and kind of whatever. So I thought it was I thought it was pretty cool. The other thing I noticed this time around was there's still a lot of new people coming. I continue to sort of meet people that sort of say this is the first one I've been to, and you know, it's so, and I like to see that, particularly. I saw a few people that were more a little bit further out state. So I think it's starting to have, you know, even broader reach, which, you know, being a St. Cloud company, I really like to see.
Yeah. There were definitely some new people. We're getting, you know, some more angel types showing up and folks from maybe the traditional legal community that are involved more with startups and more women. You know, it's not such a 99% male event anymore. A lot of guys bring their significant others along with them, you know, and it was packed. I mean, Luke told me, I think there was close to 300 in there. I mean, it was shoulder to shoulder for sure most of the evening. As I say, I never got into the demo room, which was very crowded and hot. It only holds about 125 or so. But some of the companies I knew already, and apparently there were some great demos, as I heard. Matt Bauer with his pedal brain even had a guy, a competitive cyclist up on stage with him or something. And there was a demo on iPhone apps for the real estate industry and a whole bunch of things. I'll have to post the links I'm going to put up a post with some photos and post the links to all the demonstrators.
Yeah, that'd be helpful, Graham. You know, I was able to sneak in. It was so packed. I was able to sneak in and catch about half of the mobile roots demo. And I thought it was really cool. You know, it started by two women, which is sort of I don't know if that's a first for Mini Demo, but I thought
it may be. Yeah, I think it is. Yeah.
So that was pretty cool to see. I think their platform, from what I sort of could gather, was sort of built for creating iPhone apps on behalf of politicians. And they sort of have built a nice little structure for that. I'll have to check it out and spend a little more time online. You're right, though, Graham. That was definitely tough to find a seat in. There was so much good schmoozing going on. Hard to sort of break away from that.
Well, and the sponsors took real good care of having plenty of, refreshments, shall we say. The beer never stopped flowing, and there had to be five or six varieties. And they even had wine, and they had tons of munchies. So, it the logistics are getting better and better all the time. And I talked to Bill McLeslie from IP House too, and he was been a sponsor since the beginning. And you know, he's happy to see that it, you know, it gets better each time. And, you know, you wonder if they aren't going to have to outgrow this venue at some point. I don't know. But then they had an annex set up at a nearby watering hole called Moto I, where supposedly the overflow was supposed to go hang out there and then wait for everybody to come over after the main event shut down. I didn't make that, but about 10:15, Luke was trying to push everybody out and you know, a few blocks down the street to continue the evening. So I can only guess how late that went.
Wow. Speaking of mobile, Phil, are you there?
My apologies, I was muted.
That's okay.
I didn't want to be rude by hacking in somebody's ear. So
I appreciate
that. Speaking of mobile, nice segue, Steve.
Yeah. By the way.
We do want to, you know, we've talked about Mobile March in the past that we're putting together that Minovate is also co-sponsoring. We will look to have an actual agenda posted sometime this weekend. So look for that on the Mobile March TC site within the next day or two. So we're happy that we've already got a lot of folks registered for the event without really any agenda. So we now present to you an agenda, and I think you'll find that the two-track setup with a technical and a non-technical track, the ability to kind of, you know, find yourself in different tracks and mix and match as you prefer, will make for a great day. And that'll happen on the 27th of March at the Hilton Garden Inn.
Which location is that? Which suburb?
In Minneapolis.
Oh, right downtown?
I believe it's downtown. There's a map on the site.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I was evangelizing for that last night, and I met.
I love it when you evangelize.
Well, you know, hey, that's, you know, evangelizing are us. I met a cool new startup, Build an App. You run into those guys yet?
No, I have not, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, go to buildanapp.com, and I said, hey, you guys have to be part of Mobile March, so check that out. A guy by the name of Scott Pearson is the VP of Marketing and Biz Dev. It sounds like the real deal.
Cool.
Fabulous.
Well, again, registration is open. We do have an Eventbrite set up, so go to mobilemarchtc.com, and you can get yourself hooked up there. And also feel free to use... start following us on Twitter. We'll start posting and using that account now that we have an agenda, and you'll find that at Mobile March TC.
Sounds great.
So there's my little plug, but I'm so sorry that I wasn't able to hit mini demo last night, because it sounds like it was a great time. Yesterday morning, we had the startup roundtable that Thomas Canole put together. That happened over at Third Place, and that was a very interesting event. You know, it was there was a lot of emotion in the room, and a lot of passion, and a lot of desire to make things happen. And actually, Thomas has put together some action items and is going to hold some folks' feet to the fire. So I think it'll be a good time.
That was a good part of the discussion last night. I heard all about it. I wasn't able to make it, but yeah, there was that obviously fueled the energy to some extent last night. And yeah, good on those guys, you know, for what they're doing. More power to them, you know.
Again, yeah, Thomas is really taking the reins here. And even though he's not in the city anymore, he lives in the Bay Area, you know, he still commutes back and forth quite a bit. So
yeah, his wife
had a chance to meet his lovely wife as well.
So. Yeah, cool.
So I got a question related to Third Place. So you guys, you've been to these, I know, Graham, you just went to the Coco facility,
yep,
right?
And
so,
the Coco, yep.
Yep.
Is it called Coco?
And I use Coco quite a bit myself, so.
Do you guys think something like that on a smaller scale could work in communities like Rochester, Mankato, St. Cloud?
Of course,
yeah,
it does.
Yeah. Oh, that's extra absolutely. Real estate and kind of maybe putting something up there in St. Cloud. But I'm curious what you guys think since you've been.
Of course it would. I think anytime, Rob, that you can endeavor to bring people together, no matter what their background, and put them in a room where they can connect and chat and also you know, detach themselves and work, I think it's a great idea. There has been some great collaboration that's gone on at Coco. And I had a chance to meet Josh yesterday from Third Place,
And he's been very proud of some of the collaboration that goes on there. So I don't think it's a matter of city size. I think it's a matter of culture. And if there's a culture of entrepreneurship or startup or freelance or whatever, yeah, give them an opportunity and see how it flies.
Well, and the other thing, Rob, is we've talked about this on the podcast before, but when you think going back to, I don't know, 99, when Dan Pink wrote Free Agent Nation, and it was all about how all of us were in some fashion turning into free agents. And now with the always on, always connected capability that we have with our mobile devices and Wi-Fi just about everywhere. And just like we're doing now, we're recording this over Skype and with a little more bandwidth and a little more technology, we could maybe have video, even though no one wants to look at me at 9 a.m. on a Saturday morning. but when you think about all the different virtual technologies that are available, from CRM systems to intranets and wikis and everything, that there's really no reason other than you really need to connect with other humans. You really need to be out and to be social. That's what drives us and keeps us healthy as people, is interacting with others. And that's why those facilities are so vital, because you pick up new ideas and you make new friendships and you connect with people, and it's a much more stimulating environment to be in than sitting in a home office around a card table or in your basement and so on. And there are more and more people, especially when economists talk about the fact that a lot of these corporate jobs are not coming back. Seth Godin even did a podcast where he talked about Detroit. We're all in Detroit. We all live in Detroit, or whatever he called it. And his premise was that the big deal companies are not going to come in and put together manufacturing facilities with $25 an hour jobs, and you need a high school education, and that's it. Those days are over. And so not only is a college education more important than ever before, but the ability to understand how to be independent and market yourself is a key skill. And you got to have some place to go hang out, because Caribou and Starbucks and stuff is not going to cut it, especially when they're trying to kick people out now for hanging around like we all do.
Yeah, right. Well, and I think, Rob, you make a great point here. The universities at St. Cloud and Mankato are doing wonderful things, wonderful programs. There's a lot of guys going to do startups that are coming out of those, and already have, out of those universities. And it's amazing to me every time I hear about it, about what's going on. Particularly, I know St. Cloud better than I know Mankato. But yeah, there should be a place for the entrepreneurial-minded students and recent grads to congregate in those communities. I think that would be tremendous.
Yeah, I think you're right, Graham. You know, when we started our business, we were working out of our dorm rooms and had about a dozen contractors that, you know, we'd sort of just call on. And if we needed an office, we ended up asking our attorney if we could borrow a conference room for a day if someone would happen to make the trip to St. Cloud. But I think about now, and, you know, we were sort of spawned out of St. Cloud State. And that's interesting, I think, because they haven't developed that sense of community in these sort of tier two markets. People don't know all the sort of the benefits that, you know, that they have. I think there's a little more discussion around what's going on around with the U. But you talk about, like, for example, St. Cloud State. I don't think very many people know they actually have a microloan program to fund startups. And I think they need to work on marketing that a little bit better.
Wow.
Interesting. Yeah.
I think we got to hype that.
Oh, I've never heard that. Interesting.
That's very cool. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, St. Cloud's not that far away, you know, and when they get the train, you know, going, the North Star line, I mean, man, it's going to, you know, that's going to help the connections too, for sure.
Yeah.
Make it easier.
Yeah, I think so. I you know, it's interesting. I think there's some really good stuff. You know, you got the Duap guys in Rochester. I think I've heard of a couple of things out in Mankato. It seems like there's some good stuff going on, but it's good to, I really like seeing that kind of bridge between, you know, between the more outstate kind of tier two, tier three markets and what you guys are doing. I think it's really helped connecting them all. So,
yeah, maybe we got to get Minsku to help, help us communicate this thing too. You know, I mean, yeah, the University of Minnesota and the Twin Cities is great and doing wonderful things, but Minsku is a whole different world and, you know, run by a different organization. And maybe there's a way we can leverage that and bring the entrepreneurs around the state together. And, you know, I want to put in a word for Duluth too. You know, they're doing things in the way of trying to locate software companies up there, incentives and so forth. And again, you know, it's not that far away. And we can't forget that the technology community is not just Twin Cities based here in Minnesota.
Yep, absolutely. Well, this has been fabulous. And Rob, thank you so much for carving out this time on a Saturday morning to chat with us.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Graham, Phil, Steve, and Tim. I really do appreciate all the good work you guys do, and
thanks.
I'll continue to be your biggest fan every time you get a podcast. So.
Great,
man! Right. You are just the best.
We love you.
Yeah, go W3I. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll see you soon. Thanks much.
We'll see you.
All right. Rob. Take care, everybody.
Yep. See have a good soon. Week.
Bye bye.
Bye.